Welcome to episode 52 of Practical Defense, Tactical Flashlights. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Haddix. This week, we're going to cover tactical flashlights, what they are, what they can be used for, and why you might want to keep one around. But before we jump in, we'll first hear a tip from our partner, Kristen Beck, at kristensguide.com. Kristen learned during a two-week snowstorm that old-fashioned country skills like canning foods, baking bread, knitting scarves, and making soap can make life easier when modern conveniences aren't available, such as when all the roads are closed and the grocery store shelves are wiped out. Plus, those old-fashioned skills are fun to learn, so try learning some as a new hobby. Kristen's Guide will be offering more articles on such pioneering skills. Last week's quick tip on replacing the word stop with break or cease fire in your training received a great response. I received a few emails from listeners expressing how much they liked the idea, and one instructor said that he's already incorporated the use of the word break into his lessons. And I also received this great email from Matthew in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. I got a kick out of this podcast because I had someone in a tournament signal timeout and say stop to me once, and I kicked him in the head. His hands were down. Another time I had a guy bend over and put his hands on his knees to catch his breath, so I kicked him in the head too. He was hoping that I would give him a break and let more time run out on the clock. At my school, we do almost every command in Japanese. I hardly ever hear stop. I hear yame, slang for stop in Japanese, or mate, slang for I give up in Japanese, or the forceful tap out. I hope I didn't butcher those Japanese terms too badly. I don't speak any Japanese. So thanks to everyone who provided feedback, and I appreciate the time it takes to write in, and it helps me develop the material that you guys find interesting. I also received another email from Matthew about why I always use the phrase defensive weapon. He wrote, I've heard by several self-protection experts that they don't like that word because weapons are for attack. I know that vocabulary differs from instructor to instructor, like it does from dojo to dojo, but I wondered why you chose to use that terminology. That's an excellent question, Matthew, and thanks for sending it in. Yes, all weapons are designed to incapacitate your opponent, and that's really part of the definition of what a weapon is. How you employ that weapon, your intent on its use, is the critical differentiator here, both morally and legally. I teach weapon usage for defensive purposes only. The intent is to use the weapon to make your aggressor stop his or her attack upon you. You don't want to hurt this person. You don't want to kill this person. You just want them to stop what they're doing and leave you alone. You'd be just as happy, probably happier, if they just ran away rather than forcing you to hurt them to make them stop. And that's a normal person's response to an attack. You know, just go away and leave me alone. You know, did I draw my knife, a lethal force weapon, because I was afraid for my life? If yes, that's a defensive use of that weapon. The moment you use your weapon to attack someone for any reason other than personal protection, that is the moment you become the aggressor. You stop being the defender and start becoming the criminal. You know, did I draw my knife because this guy pissed me off and I want to hurt him? That's assault. You just became the criminal. It's the same weapon, a knife, but two totally different attitudes and two totally different intents. So I refer to all weapons as defensive to underscore the intent of the implementation. A gun will always bring lethal force to bear, but that force can be of an offensive nature, I'm going to rob or kill you, or a defensive nature, I want you to stop trying to kill me. As law-abiding civilians, weapons should only be used for defensive purposes. When used offensively, you cross over into the realm of criminal behavior. We'll be right back with our look at tactical flashlights and why you should consider carrying one. This week, I'm going to review a tool that everyone should consider carrying. I brought them up on the show before, but this time it's going to get the spotlight, so to speak. And I'm talking about flashlights, and not just any flashlights, but tactical flashlights. So what I'm going to cover is what makes a flashlight truly tactical, the benefits of carrying one, and the options you want to look for when choosing your very own. Now, the term tactical is a hot marketing moniker these days. You'll see it attached to all sorts of items from clothing to any array of gear, and often it's used just to jack up the price. Now, it used to be associated with high-quality items designed for conflict scenarios used by elite military and police teams, but now it's so overused it's almost meaningless. So keep this in the back of your mind when purchasing any gear, not just flashlights. Tactical flashlights as we know them today have their roots in firearms. These were the lights that could be mounted to rifles, carbines, and pistols for their use in low-light or nighttime operations by military and police. But what was happening was that the standard flashlights couldn't take the punishment of being mounted near the end of a gun barrel. The recoil and concussion of the gun going off was breaking bulbs and the fine wires inside the flashlight. Also, a standard flashlight didn't have the illumination strength needed for conflict conditions. Moving through your home during a blackout or your backyard at night is not the same as clearing a room of hostile criminals. So the firearms industry started making specialized flashlights that could take the punishment of being attached to a gun that also provided the light intensity needed to quickly identify targets, and at the same time be small enough not to give up too much weight to the weapons platform or get in the way of the other equipment. These were the first tactical lights, and they were really expensive, and they could cost almost as much as the whole firearm itself. And they came in many shapes and sizes, and some were permanently attached to rails to be mounted to firearms, and some were detachable and could be used separately from the firearms. Now, those detachable models have evolved into what we now call tactical flashlights. So why would you want to carry a flashlight? Having your own light source is never a bad thing. You can carry a flashlight nearly everywhere because it's not considered a weapon. And also consider this. We're heading into the warm summer months, and with all the increased power demand for air conditioning units, blackouts are expected in cities all across the world. Since you don't know where you'll be when an outage strikes, you know, a garage, a subway, deep inside a building, a restaurant at night, having a good flashlight will make a huge difference in your confidence level and being able to move safely through your environment. Also, with everyone trying to cut costs these days, I've noticed that parking lots and structures are turning on fewer lights at night and even cutting lights out entirely in areas designated as unnecessary. Now, this means that moving around after dark just got a lot more dangerous. Carrying a flashlight is also a good deterrent to criminals. The mere fact that you carry one is an indicator that you're prepared, and being prepared means that you're a hard target. And what do criminals want? A soft, unprepared, easy target. Also, nothing says, I see you, like shining a light directly onto someone. Now, if you have a certain type of flashlight, it can also double as a defensive weapon. And in fact, you can find them in shapes and sizes nearly identical to a Kubaton, and you could use them in the exact same manner. You grip it in your hand like a hammer, with a bit sticking out of either end of your clenched fist, and you can use it as a blunt instrument. Now, this type of implementation is also called a force multiplier, since it increases the effectiveness of an impact strike. There's also something that a flashlight can do that can momentarily stun a would-be attacker, but not harm them in any way. You can shine the light directly into his eyes, and this will temporarily blind the person approaching you, disorient him, and give you a chance to get some distance between you and this person. And this is especially effective if the person's eyes have already become accustomed to the darkness. Another good thing about using the light in this manner is that it's not illegal, at least not that I've ever heard. And in fact, it's the first thing that a police officer does when he or she approaches someone at night. That big, bright light goes right into your eyes. Now, please, please don't be stupid and use laser pointers and point them into people's eyes. Those can cause permanent damage and are considered assault. I'm talking about tactical lights or even normal flashlights here. Okay, so we have a history of tactical flashlights and we have a bunch of good reasons to carry them. Next, we move on to how to choose a tactical flashlight. You need to think of purchasing a good tactical flashlight in the same way you would any other defensive weapon. You want a good quality item within your budget. Going cheap might mean it could fail you when you need it most, but you should also not break your bank. So here's some features that you want to look for in a tactical flashlight. The brightness. You want the light to give off at least 65 lumens. And this is enough strength to really illuminate an area and temporarily blind an adversary. If you work in the military or law enforcement, you might need 120 or more, but any civilian should be fine with 65 or more. And for reference, the one I carry in my briefcase and even my gym bag is 80 lumens. You want a shock-isolated bulb or LED. A shock isolation system provides impact protection for the lamp filament bulbs. LEDs are naturally shock-resistant. If you drop the light or use it for defense, it should work afterwards. And I don't know about you, but I've dropped normal flashlights on concrete floors and had the bulbs break on me. and it sucks being stuck in the dark with a broken flashlight. The overall length is a consideration. If you want to use it as an impact weapon, it needs to stick out from your clenched fist. So for most people, you're looking at something that's 5.5 inches or about 15 centimeters long. The size is a consideration. It shouldn't be too large, too heavy, or too cumbersome. As with anything you might carry in your person, if it's a pain to keep around, you aren't going to carry it. So this is true for any defensive weapon, be it knife, handgun, Kubaton, or pepper spray. So choose something that would be comfortable carrying with you on a night out on the town. You should consider the shape. Now, I've seen defensive tactical lights that have ridges or teeth around the bezel. I don't recommend these. Just like Kubatons, you want a hard but blunt striking surface. If you have a pointed Kubaton, like some of these Ninja Kubatons, or a flashlight with teeth or ridges, and you pierce the skin with your strikes, it puts the weapon into a different category and could be treated differently in court. Also, when you're in front of a jury, do you want the killer defensive death light as Exhibit A, or would you prefer to have something that your grandma might have in her purse? And by the way, this is also good advice for any knife that you might carry. You want a constant on feature. It's kind of a no-brainer, but you want the ability to turn the light on and have it stay on. You want a tail cap switch. You should hold the light in the same way you would a knife or a Kubaton, and that's with what we call the hammer grip. You want to wrap all your fingers around the unit and close it off with your thumb, just like you would wield a hammer. You then shift your thumb to the back to manipulate the power switch on the end. Consider a strobe feature. Now, a strobe feature is fantastic. The quick flashing of intense light in the face can really be effective in disorienting your assailant, but could, triple the cost of the flashlight. It's not an inexpensive feature. And last, we have the battery type. Now, there are tons of battery options for these types of lights. However, you should always use the manufacturer-recommended battery type in your tactical light. Now, besides the normal alkaline batteries, some now use nickel-cadmium, nickel-metal hydride, or lithium-ion. Now, the nice thing about the lithium-ion batteries is that they can sit around and not drain. They'll remain almost as good as the day you bought them for nearly a decade. Your standard mini mag light will not fit most of these requirements, although I have seen them actually listed as being tactical. But if you don't have the budget for a true tactical light, a mini mag light will actually work. The leader in the tactical light field is Surefire, but their products are a little more expensive than the other manufacturers. So shop around, carefully review the feature set that you're looking for, and make your choice. So, in summary, for tactical flashlights, we have... The term tactical is a hot marketing term, and it's way overused and even misused, so keep that in the back of your mind when purchasing any gear, not just flashlights. Carrying and using a flashlight can be a deterrent to criminals. It demonstrates that you're prepared. As we head into the summer months, you can expect blackouts at inconvenient times, so be prepared with your own light source. A good tactical flashlight can be used as a makeshift impact weapon. Shining a light into the eyes can disorient and distract a would-be attacker, giving you a greater opportunity to escape. When making your purchase, consider the following options. The brightness should be at least 65 lumens. You should have a shock-isolated bulb or LED. The size, weight, and shape should be a good match for your hand and easy to carry all day long. You want a tail cap switch control mechanism. A strobe feature is fantastic if it's within your budget. Use the manufacturer-recommended battery types. If you can't afford a full tactical light, anything is better than nothing. And as always, don't forget to check out my monthly column on taekwondotimes.com. It's called Raising Awareness. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddicts.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe. Well, that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions and commentary, send an email to podcast@alexaddicts.com. That's podcast@alexaddicts.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexaddicts.com. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.